Dr. William Luther Pierce on Focusing Our Anger, 1997.
Hello. Hillary Clinton went to South Africa a few days ago to show the Clinton government's support for black rule in that country. She met with the new black ruler of South Africa, Nelson Mandela, and she toured the prison where Mandela was an inmate for 27 years. And she said all of the politically correct things during her tour about white injustice toward blacks and the victims of apartheid and so on. The average American viewer watching her performance on television and listening to her comments was given the very definite impression that the jailing of Mandela was one of the injustices Mrs. Clinton was talking about, that Mandela was a victim of apartheid who had been locked up by the wicked South African racists merely because he was a black man. Now, the fact of the matter is that Mandela was locked up for being a terrorist and nothing else. In 1963, the police in South Africa broke up a terrorist gang which had been meeting at Rivonia near Johannesburg. The group consisted of both blacks, of whom Mandela was one, and Jews, plus one Indian. The Rivonia gang had detailed plans for a campaign of terror and murder. They already had carried out a number of terrorist killings before they were arrested. Terrorists acting under their direction had murdered a number of white South Africans, including women and children. Some of the Jews involved managed to escape from the country and continued their terrorist activities from abroad. One of these Jews who escaped was Joe Slovo, the Communist Party leader of South Africa. Mandela was not able to escape, however, because he already had been picked up by the police in connection with his illegal Communist Party activities before the raid on the terrorist headquarters at Rivonia. He was put on trial for his role in the terrorist conspiracy, convicted, and sentenced to life in prison. Now, of course, he is a hero of the leftists, including the Clintons and the American news media. At home, the Clintons are very much down on terrorists and always are calling for new laws to fight them and for more severe punishments when they're caught. It wasn't always that way. Back during the 1960s and 1970s, Bill Clinton ran around with terrorists who burned ROTC buildings on university campuses and bombed selective service offices. The lesson in all of this is that when the Clintons condemn terrorism, what they mean is that terrorism by white people on behalf of white people is bad and must be stamped out, but terrorism by Jews or blacks against whites is commendable. It is unfortunate that the great mass of white Americans are not able to see this hypocrisy on the part of the Clintonistas. The reason they can't see it is that the controlled news media keep it covered up. How many of you listening today have ever even heard of Rivonia? You've certainly heard plenty about Nelson Mandela and the fact that he was sent to prison by the white South African government. But the implication always is that his only offense was that he was a black leader and that his imprisonment was an instance of white injustice against blacks. You never hear that he was convicted of terrorism, of being an active terrorist in a gang which had murdered white South Africans and had the intent to murder many more of them and overthrow their government. The bosses of the news media know that, and the Clintons know that, but they deliberately conceal that information from you. If you're really interested in the details, go to any large library and look for information about what was happening in South Africa in 1963, 1964, and 1965 in connection with the Rivonia terrorist gang. That name again is Rivonia, R-I-V-O-N-I-A. That's where Nelson Mandela got his start. But you'd never learn that from listening to Hillary Clinton or watching the television news today. And there are many other things you'd never learn from Hillary or the television news. Mrs. Clinton has been holding a number of press conferences during her South African tour, and she never fails to say how pleased she is by all of the progress which has been made since the advent of black rule there. She smiles and tells the television audience how wonderful everything is in South Africa now that the whites no longer are running the country. And that is a bare-faced lie, but you won't hear any television newsman contradicting her. The truth is that South Africa has become a much more dangerous and unpleasant place to live for both blacks and whites since the country was turned over to black rule 3 years ago, and Mrs. Clinton and the media bosses know it. The murder rate and the rate for crime of all types have skyrocketed. Johannesburg, which used to be a clean, decent, and safe city under white rule, now has the highest murder rate in the world. Gangs of armed black criminals roam the streets of Johannesburg and prey on both blacks and whites with impunity. In the black tribal areas of South Africa, old superstitions have reasserted themselves, and thousands of blacks have been burned, hacked, or stoned to death on suspicion of being witches during the past 3 years. If your neighbor's cow dies, he may accuse you of having caused the death by witchcraft, and then you may have your hands wired behind your back and a gasoline-soaked tire put around your neck and set afire. The same punishment blacks used to administer to other blacks suspected of collaborating with whites. Under white rule, killing blacks suspected of witchcraft was not tolerated. But now, there's no one to stop the practice. White South Africans who live on farms or who drive in rural areas must worry constantly about black gangs. One of the practices of these gangs is to descend suddenly upon a white farm or to force an automobile with white occupants off the road, and then gang rape any white females they find. The infrastructure of South Africa is beginning to come apart from neglect and corruption, and whites who can afford it and have the option are fleeing the country. Even blacks often will whisper to visitors that they wish whites were still running the country because their lives were much better under white rule. South Africa, in other words, is coming unraveled under black rule, is ceasing to function as a civilized country, much like our nation's capital, Washington, D.C., also is coming unraveled under black rule. But don't expect to learn this from any television news program. You know, I talk with many people about things like this deliberate sanctification by the controlled news media of a black terrorist thug and their lying about conditions in South Africa. And sometimes I become emotional when I talk about such things. It angers me. It makes me furious that our news media, on which we depend for our knowledge about what's going on in the world, are under the control of a bunch of Jews who deliberately deceive us in order to advance their own interests. What irritates me, at least as much as this deception, however, is the moral paralysis of many of the people to whom I speak. They agree with me that it is bad that the news media deliberately deceive us, but they don't become angry about it. They don't become outraged. They just take it for granted that the media are deceptive, but they don't feel any obligation to do something about that. It's as if they consider themselves merely spectators watching the world go by like some sort of drama on a television screen. I'll give you another example. And that is what is happening to young white women in our armed forces. It's good, of course, that the Army brass finally have made a move against the black drill instructors and black officers who have been raping them. Finally. What has not changed, however, is the system which deliberately subjects white women to the authority of black males and pretends that everything will be all right. A system which pretends that there is no difference between blacks and whites or between women and men. That filthy and destructive system is still in place, and it is only a fluke that the rapes and other abuse of our women under that system have been exposed. It's not that no one knew what was happening all along. All of the white enlisted men and the white officers knew what was happening, but they didn't do anything about it because they were afraid of being accused of racism. So now, finally, the dirty little secret about our army is out, because a few women raised hell about it, but the system is still in place. How the filthy creatures who designed that system and support that system must be smirking and gloating now. You know, more than 20 years ago, in 1975, when I began writing the Turner Diaries, I foresaw this sort of thing, and I predicted it in my book. I saw that, on the one hand, the feminists were generating hostility between men and women and were undermining the special protected status that women always had had in our society. And on the other hand, the race fanatics who demanded the forced social integration of the races were poisoning the minds of our young people with their propaganda and persuading them that it was evil to refuse to give blacks whatever they wanted because their ancestors had been the slaves of our ancestors and we owed them something. I saw this, and I predicted that it would lead to both large-scale miscegenation and to a much greater incidence of violence against our women and rape of our women. In fact, there is an episode in the Turner Diaries where black U.S. Army soldiers are gang-raping white girls, and white officers who are aware of what is happening refuse to interfere out of fear of being charged with racism. And so now, just a little over 20 years later, it has come to pass. But I did not make that prediction cold-bloodedly. I looked at the trends I could see in 1975, and I thought about where they would take our society in the next 20 years. But I wasn't cool and detached about it. I was mad as hell, and I'm still mad as hell. Even back in 1975, I wanted to take all of the feminist agitators and propagandists and all of the race-mixing fanatics and all of the media bosses and all of the bureaucrats and politicians who were collaborating with them, and I wanted to put them up against a wall in batches of 1,000 or so at a time and machine gun them. And I still want to do that. I am convinced that one day we will have to do that before we can get our civilization back on track. And I look forward to that day. Of course, I didn't machine gun any of these destroyers of our civilization, any of these poisoners of the souls of our people, because I didn't have the means for doing so. But I didn't just sit on my hands either. I pledged that I would do everything that I could do to build the means for one day stamping out the filth that is poisoning our people. And that's what I have been doing. Reaching out to our people through every feasible medium, through books and through the internet and through these American Dissident Voices broadcasts, informing our people, awakening them, explaining things to them, and trying to inspire them. And I know that I've been reaching many people because I hear from them all the time. They tell me that I have helped them to understand what is happening, that I have helped them to make sense out of things, that I have given them a new sense of direction. And I am glad for all of that. But what is still disconcerting to me is the relatively small number of these people who display any passion, any anger. For many of them, it is as if they have been watching a confusing television drama, and I have helped them to understand the drama a little better, but it still isn't real to them. It still isn't their responsibility to do something about it. They still are just spectators. Not all of them. The number of people who are angry is growing, but too many are still just dispassionate spectators. Maybe I shouldn't be irritated about this. Maybe this is just human nature. Maybe most people are inherently incapable of being anything but spectators, although I'm inclined to believe that the television age has encouraged and exacerbated this passivity in some people who might otherwise be active and responsible citizens. Anyway, I should be thankful that at least understanding is growing among the spectators as well as among the more active people. Even passive support based on understanding is better than nothing. But our real hope for the future lies with the people who still are capable of feeling moral outrage, still are capable of becoming angry, angry that our news media are being used to deceive us, angry that our entertainment media are being used to poison the minds of our people, angry that our government used our resources to pressure the people of South Africa into turning their country over to black savages, angry that our army has become what it is today. We need many more such angry people. Our anger, of course, must be focused and directed. When someone sees his world being destroyed, when someone sees the future of his children being stolen from them, when someone sees everything around him that is fine and noble and beautiful being trampled into the mud, when someone sees his heritage, which has been created through the work and sacrifice of countless thousands of his forebears, falling into the uncaring hands of savages, it is easy for him to be angry at many things, at many people. It is easy to be angry at liberals who manage to be on the wrong side of every issue and whose mindless egalitarianism lies at the root of most of the destructive policies which are wrecking our civilization. It is easy to be angry at lawyers, along with big businessmen and corporation executives, a privileged class whose members seem to be far more interested in fattening themselves on the various processes of decay in our society, even hastening those processes whenever it seems personally advantageous to them, rather than using their positions of influence to oppose the destruction. It is easy to be angry at homosexuals and feminists, those sick creatures whose organized drive to remake the world to suit their own perverse needs has so poisoned our society in recent decades. And it is certainly easy to be angry at blacks and other non-whites whose pestilential presence has done so much damage to our world. And all of that anger would be justified. Certainly, we must deal with each of these groups decisively before we can restore our world to health. But to focus on any of them now can only mislead us. There are just two proper targets for our attention and our anger now. They are, first and foremost, the controlled news and entertainment media, which have promoted and orchestrated every destructive and degenerative movement, policy, and tendency which afflicts our society. And second, the government, which for all practical purposes is today a creature of the media. Without the backing of the mass media, liberalism would still be only a nutcase fringe tendency among a minority of academics and clerics. The whole campaign of racial integration and special rights for blacks, which has pushed blacks into every facet of white society since the Second World War, has been directed by the mass media. Even the black violence, which has flared up so often in our cities, is a direct and deliberate media product, a product designed to intimidate white opposition. None of the rioting, burning, and looting in Los Angeles a couple of years ago, following the Rodney King incident, for example, would have occurred if the mass media had not incited it with their endless repetition on television of the arrest scene. Without the media incitement, it would have been just one more arrest of a drug-crazed black criminal by fed-up white policemen. And just as the controlled news media today portray a black terrorist and murderer of white women and children in South Africa as a saintly hero, just as they deliberately create the utterly false impression in white Americans that South Africa has become more peaceful and more prosperous since the end of white rule, so it was the same sort of media lying and misrepresentation about South Africa in the past which led the U.S. government to boycott South Africa and apply other pressure leading to black rule. The media, with their lies and propaganda, manipulate public opinion, and the politicians in the government just follow along. And so it is with virtually every other governmental policy. The media push public opinion in the direction the media bosses want it to go, and the politicians, willing to do anything to be elected, go along. So let us keep in mind who the principal enemies of our people are, and let us keep our anger focused on these enemies. But let us also remember that our anger must not be dissipated in foolish and unproductive violence. Not now. Not yet. Now is the time for hard work, for intelligent work, not for violence. Thanks for being with me again today.